Welcome to Lamenting the Leafs. I'm Cam with Nick and Keith, and we are back from one of our customary 3 to 4 week breaks. And look, I know it's not ideal. You know, we do appreciate those of you who would like to hear from us more frequently. We hear you, you know. We genuinely do plan to record basically every week, but, you know, we're busy. It's a hobby for all of us. And frankly, boys, like, this is the way to cover hockey, if you ask me. Like, we could probably be out here doing an episode or two a week, every week, if we really wanted to grind it out, but you got to let it breathe a little sometimes, you know?
Like, I feel like we'd all have a couple takes we want to take back if we didn't have a week to sit on them.
This is how we avoid the brain worms, right?
Yeah.
This is how we keep the takes from getting too hot.
It works really well. Go back and listen to our season prediction episodes after taking the off season off. Yeah.
But like I say, we're busy. You guys have young daughters. Presumably, they have stashes of crayons that we want to protect. So we got to prevent the brain worms any way we can. But there are just 6 games remaining in the season. And kind of feels like the Leafs are getting hot at the right time here. At the very least, they are getting healthy. Mitch Marner returned Saturday night against the Habs after quite a stretch off.
And 12 games.
Morgan Riley. Yeah, Morgan Riley back recently as well. Nick, how are you feeling about the Leafs here over the last few weeks and as we kind of head down the home stretch here?
Well, I think you kind of alluded to it there right off the top. Things are starting to, it seems like, fall in place for this team, especially since the All-Star break. They've been one of the better teams in the entire NHL. They've been I believe they are still the highest scoring team in the league since that time. And, you know, they've started to lock it down a little more defensively as the new guys start to get used to each other and find their roles. And I don't think it can be overstated how remarkable Ilya Samsonov's bounce back has been, to the point where, you know, heading into the playoffs, I think it's his job to lose at the moment. We'll get into that a little bit more later on. But yeah, I feel like they're in a good spot right now, and it's going to come down to these last few games, just trying to dial things in and just prepare themselves the best they can for game one.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me lately is the team just got, it felt like it just got really deep quickly.
Yeah.
The lineup, like the forward lines and the defense, like everything, defense and even the state of the goaltending. Like, I know we're going to talk about it more, but like, even like if Wohl had to go in tomorrow and Samsonov was down or hurt or whatever, even on like even later into the season going into the playoffs, I wouldn't be in panic mode. I know he hasn't been great lately, but like,
yeah, going beyond that, even if you had to turn to Martin Jones, right? Like, it's not right, ideal, yeah, but yeah, you could do a lot worse.
It's not panic mode. Yeah, yeah. Like, you're not starting Calvin Pickard, but I know he's been pretty good, but anyways, the forward lines are encouraging, this the type of games that they've been playing. And I know we've, you know, the topic of snot and pushback and all that has been going and raging all year, but it has been nice to see them like be on the offensive with that kind of stuff and not just will or will they not react to people taking liberties with them. They're the ones kind of getting out there and doing that. The physicality's ramping up at the right time of the year. It's been fun games to watch lately, especially with that depth and just, you know, other guys contributing. And even if they're not on the score sheet, they seem to be just kind of mixing it up every shift. So yeah, I'm done with the regular season. I'm ready to start where it counts.
Oh man, I was feeling that heavily the last couple of days. I mean, you mentioned the forward lines, like there's lots to sink our teeth into there, right? Like the big news with Marner coming back being that, you know, he's not paired up with Matthews right away because they like the look of that top line with Bertuzzi and Domi on the wings. How are you guys feeling about that look so far?
I mean, I love that they're at least trying it. The fact that top line was able to still be quite productive in Marner's absence, and Domi and Bertuzzi were able to gel alongside Matthews, and he was able to find his way playing between them. I think that's a big part of what has allowed them to try spreading out the offense like this. Obviously, encouraging results early on against the Habs on Saturday night. Wait and see how it holds up against a bit of a stiffer test here down the stretch. But I think it's a great idea for Keefe to try. And the emergence of a player like Bobby McMahon has also been a big part of making it possible. You know, you don't want to be spreading your stars across three lines if one of those lines includes David Kampf or Connor Dewar or someone like that who maybe doesn't have the offensive upside to capitalize on some of the chances that'll be created. But, you know, you're slotting William Nylander down on the third line, but he's playing with Pontus Holmberg, who, yeah, maybe not the highest offensive upside in the league, but he's shown an ability to contribute, get in on the forecheck, create pressure, all those things. But on the left side, you've got Matthew Knies, who, you know, he was probably playing a bit or playing in a role that was a bit above his capabilities for a lot of the season. I think he did well to keep his head above water, playing alongside Matthews and Marner in those tough matchups for most of the season. But now you've got him slotted down a little bit lower. You've got him still playing with an extremely talented offensive player. And I think that they can be a good fit together. So what we've seen in the past with this team in the playoffs, the fact that they maybe haven't had the most balanced offensive attack, I think it's an encouraging sign to see Keith trying this look heading into the postseason. And, you know, hopefully it sticks.
Yeah, I think you nailed it in mentioning Bobby McMahon. He kind of feels like the X factor in all of this is, you know, obviously had an incredible run the second half of the year and, you know, has emerged as like an actual offensive weapon for the Leafs. And now you've just given
him. You know what, though? I think I've been like equally impressed with his defensive game.
Yeah.
It's obviously a bit more understated than what he does at the offensive end, but I think he's just been, you know, full marks at both ends of the ice.
Well, and he's big, he's fast, he gets in on the forecheck too. Like he disrupts things and he, yeah, he's, and now you're giving him one of the best, you know, right-handed playmaking players in the game as a big, you know, a big left-handed shot on the other side that's been, you know, scoring pretty well scoring at a pretty good clip lately. So, I mean, that's the thing that I'm kind of watching. And then obviously in the first game, they connect on a goal, which is obviously not going to slow down the hype for it anytime soon. But I mean, the top line's been good with Marner out. And Matthews scores every night for a joke. And, you know, Bertuzzi and Domi look, I've been, you know, very impressed with the kind of chemistry that those three found pretty quickly. So now you know, just looking at it from a matchup perspective and kind of a, how do you defend that? You throw absolutely everything you have at the first two lines, and then you still got William Nylander coming over who's going to score 100 points this year. That's tough. And I feel like you said, like they just haven't had that in years past. You've seen how teams have been able to just empty the chamber on the top couple of lines and then just kind of tread water against the bottom six. And there's been advantages on the other teams in the bottom six in the past. So I hope they keep it together. There's a part of me that still has a bit of a, you know, fear is probably not the right word, but part of me who still kind of thinks that, you know, Matthews ends up with Marner to start the playoffs, but you got to keep trying at least for the next, you know, three or four games.
Well, where are you guys at with that in terms of, you know, the matchups that the Matthews line is going to get? Because in the past, a big part of wanting to keep Matthews and Marner together is that they're both so good defensively that they can be trusted in any matchup. And I don't think that you have the same kind of effect with Domi on that line. So where are you guys at with that heading into the playoffs?
I definitely think that that's going to be something they'll need to address. Like, you know, that's not going to be a line you keep intact for a full 60 minutes on almost any night, I wouldn't think. You know, you're going to have to sub in whether it's, you know, Yarncroak or, you know, whoever else. You have to shift up there. Holmberg, like, you know, there's plenty of guys that you can kind of shift in there for a little bit more of the defensive presence. But I will say that, you know, one of my favorite lines I think that Matthews has played on at any point in his career was that rookie season when he had Brown and Hyman on his wings, just putting two fucking absolute dogs on his wing who are going to get in there, cause some shit, create some turnovers. Obviously, you know, Domi and Bertuzzi have a little bit more offensive firepower than those two guys had in their rookie season. So, you know, you can create some plays. Like I say, it's going to be something that you'll have to probably take another look at when it's a one goal game in the last 10 minutes of the third or whatever. But I think that there's a lot of potential to have that line be successful and then also obviously create a lot of opportunity down the lineup for, you know, the second and third lines, and you can load those up a bit.
And you make a good point with bringing, just mentioning Yarncroak, is where the hell does he fit in here in this? Like, is he coming in, like he's going to be on the fourth line. Like I it's going to be hard to imagine where he goes.
Well, Nick, you wrote about this for the Leafs Nation, about these forward lines, which are, as you said earlier, Keith, like the depth is really popping out here these last few weeks. And I mean, Nick, the kind of larger point you had there was, you know, they're very well equipped. Sheldon Keefe has a lot of options in the bottom six, as opposed to, you know, previous years, or maybe you had Kerfoot, Mikheyev, guys who are, you know, you kind of, you know what you're getting, and it's all kind of
low event.
Yeah, it's just different sides of the same coin, and now you've kind of got a lot more different play styles to choose from.
Yeah, and I mean, like, even beyond that, like the raw numbers that they have to work with, like does anyone really feel like Nick Robertson deserved to come out of the lineup for Mitch Marner? I wouldn't say so. He's performed quite admirably. He's been on a little bit of a heater goal scoring wise over the last handful of games that he's been in. But that's just where they're at right now with the amount of depth that they have. Robertson comes out for, you know, another offensively inclined player in Marner. So it kind of fills that spot. So when you're looking at Yarncroak, you're going to have to find a second player who probably doesn't deserve to come out of the lineup to make way for him. Looking at it right now, I think the best way to utilize Yarncroak when he is healthy is kind of start him off on that fourth line, maybe in place of Reeves, depending on how the series is going. But you kind of float him around the lineup, as we've seen Keefe do with him in the past. You know, maybe you line him up alongside Matthews and Bertuzzi for some defensive zone starts in place of Domi, things like that, just to get his minutes up and just sort of use him as a bit of a rover across the lines. I just think they're in a really good spot. And like you said, Cam, the variety and the options they have, you know, if you're looking to set the physical tone, you've got Ryan Reeves there, willing and able to get in on the forecheck. He's shown a lot of functional physicality lately, actually like getting there and disrupting opposing possessions and helping to sustain offensive zone pressure for that fourth line. I think he's up around like 60% expected goals since the All-Star break. So he's been giving them everything they could have hoped for when they signed him. Then you've got, you know, I think Connor Dewar is probably a pretty safe bet to stick in the lineup, but he's a guy that you could change in and out depending on what you need. But he brings some speed, a bit of tenacity, can play in the middle or on the wing. And he's definitely helped improve the penalty kill over the last few weeks, which, you know, the unit as a whole has definitely taken a step forward as of late, which is encouraging heading into the playoffs. Then you've got like a guy like Nick Robertson, who's scoring at a 20 goal pace this season, is on the outside looking in at the moment. And the Leafs just haven't had that before in the Matthews era. So the fact that you have all those options to utilize depending on how the series is playing out and what exactly you might need for a given game, I think they're in a really good spot up front.
You guys have Reeves in your game one lineup?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. And I'm surprising myself with that. Yeah. But like, you know, when things got started early in the season and, you know, it wasn't going so hot, I really figured the guy was on the Klingberg Express headed directly for Robidoux Island.
I thought he was.
And he would be long gone by this point.
Dude, when he tweaked his knee, I didn't think he'd ever play a game of hockey again.
But like you said, Nick, I mean, he has been a new player down the stretch here. And I mean, I think, like you said, in terms of what you hope for when you signed him, there's no way that, you know, you would have signed him and he's playing this well, this close to playoffs, and you would ever think, well, no, we'll keep him on the sideline. Like, he's going to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. At least to start, right? Like, get him in there, set the tone, kind of just impose his will physically the way that he's been doing game after game for the last, 2 months. And, you know, depending on how things play out, maybe you need to inject a little more speed onto that fourth line or something. Noah Gregor gets in for him. Maybe you want a little bit more scoring. You knock someone down to that fourth line and throw Nick Robertson in there. There's a lot of ways that Keefe can go here.
Basically, I almost think that he would have to be almost unplayable to not be in that game one lineup. And he's actually yes. been kind of good. So like, he's definitely yeah. going to be there, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I almost feel like if you're going to do it, it almost has to be two games, like just a one and done, send him out there for 8 minutes in the first game and throw three or four hits. And like, I don't know. I don't know what that does for the longevity of a series. I almost feel like he's, yeah, like you just said, Cam, like he almost has to like play himself out of the lineup. Like, I don't know if he's just a naturally just guy. I've been seeing a lot of like, get him in there for game one, set the tone, and then bring him out. And I'm like, I don't know if that's the case, man. I kind of feel like he's there and potentially just there for the series, but remains to be seen. Like, if you do the math on that, though, that means Yarncroke or Dewar or Kampf is out, right? Like, that's
or Holmberg.
And I don't see them wanting to put Connor Dewar in that third line center role or David Kampf. So it's, I mean, unless Yarncroke plays center, I guess.
Yeah, they've never used Yarncroke down the middle over.
Not
the
in
last...
an honest effort, like the not.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I don't see that.
I can't see them turning to that, like with him coming off of two pretty significant injuries that have cost them a large chunk of his season. For them to kind of pivot and throw him down the middle at this point seems highly unlikely.
Yeah,
I think they really. They really want Holmberg to win that job, and I think that he, like, if Holmberg is playing up to his capabilities, I think he's a perfectly fine player in that role. But, you know, we've seen a few dips here and there, and we've seen Keith kind of lose faith in him at times. But right now, I mean, he's being given a prime opportunity to lock down a spot alongside William Nylander and Matthew Knies if they opt to keep this spread offense intact heading into the postseason.
And look, and this is not to knock Nick Robertson. Like, he's been playing great, but Holmberg and Knies looked great with Robertson, and now they're getting William Nylander. So, like, I don't,
yeah,
you know, on paper, it doesn't seem like they should take a step back.
Yeah, lots of decisions to be made up front. And as you know, you kind of were saying, Nick, it's, I don't want to say an embarrassment of riches at the bottom of the lineup, but you got lots of options.
Good problem to have.
Yeah, for sure. And we spoke briefly about Bobby McMahon, who, you know, as you say, this kind of almost creates this logjam, right? Because, you know, all of a sudden he's like been an established top six guy for the better part of the second half of the season. And like, you know, you're totally comfortable rolling him out like that. And now all of a sudden the depth just gets so much better. And we haven't recorded since Brad Treliving took care of not only one, but maybe two of his best pieces of work since, you know, taking over as Leafs general manager, signing both Bobby McMahon and Simone Benoit to similar deals, 1.35 average annual value, 2 years for McMahon, 3 years for Benoit. So, I mean, we can start on McMahon because, like, this contract, which looked beautiful at the time, has just gotten better week by week since it's been signed, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, the guy has grown into, like, at the very least, a bona fide top nine forward for, you know, a very quality team in the NHL. Say what you will about their past playoff struggles or whatever. This is has been a very strong regular season team for a number of years. And Bobby McMahon has gone from, you know, passing through waivers at the beginning of the year and, you know, finally carving out a bit of a spot as a 27-year-old undrafted minor league journeyman. And now he looks like a very important contributor for this team heading into the playoffs. Like, this guy's up to 15 goals already on the season. And he didn't have, or when did he score his first one? Sometime in January, I believe. So,
well, he started playing the year like 8 minutes a night too, right? Like, even when he was in the lineup.
And then he found himself on the outside for a little bit. And the greatest part of all this is, like, he wasn't even supposed to be in the lineup that night that he recorded the hat trick that has kind of just catapulted him onto this run that he's been on over the last couple of months. So, you know, very fortunate for the Leafs that it has worked out this way. But, you know, there's a lot of things that could have happened that would have made this not a thing. And credit to Bobby McMahon for taking full advantage of the opportunity and showing what he's capable of. And yeah, like I said, he's grown into a very important piece of a team with Stanley Cup aspirations.
Yeah, he's grabbed it with both hands. And same deal for Benoit, who, I mean, was just a very unheralded guy coming into camp. And
he passed through waivers, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's surprised every you know, step along the way. And now he's locked in. So, love it.
I think that contract could look phenomenal in the second and third year. Like, Benoit is a player who I think we've seen just continue to get better as the season has gone on and really just kind of find his footing in the role that he's been asked to play. And I think he's excelled in that role for most of the season. So you're looking at a guy who, like, even if all he is a really good third pair defenseman,
still good money that for that
contract. There's no downside to either of these contracts, really, from a Leafs perspective. There's only upside.
And like with the cap going up, I think they're both variable. So like disaster planning, worst case scenario, don't think it'd get there, but like there's really no risk. And even if even if they both kind of play to their floor, which or what they look like right now, they're still probably a net positive in terms of cap hit to value. So
yeah.
And we've talked at length about how much this team kind of needs that surplus value. So they both are just like great stories too. Like, you know, just from the human side of the sport, it's been nice to see like guys, you know, Bobby McMahon doing what he's done through every level of the minor leagues, and then Benoit, you know, not getting qualified and having a pretty terrible first impression with the Leafs too. Like that, people still talk about that preseason game, how bad he looked, and then he was hurt and all that kind of stuff. So
he didn't look like he could skate. And now he gets around the ice pretty damn well for a guy of his stature. I think he covers a lot of ground really well.
He's carried the puck up the wall a couple of times in the last couple of weeks where you're like, doesn't really look like that just big, you know, cement foot, rugged D-man. Like, I'm not saying he's got offensive, untapped offensive potential, but like, he's not a complete stiff and he can make, you know, the safe play. He kind of just knows who he is and plays his role. And obviously, you throw hits the way that he does in a market like Toronto, and that certainly doesn't hurt with the fan base.
What did he have, like 11 against Tampa on Wednesday night?
Yeah.
Like,
and he just, I don't know, like he just completely throws his body like just recklessly. And that's, that type of player lives on for a long time with Leafs fans. So good for them both. I'm happy both again from the human side of it, but also just the fact that these deals in a couple of years are going to look pretty nice, I think.
Yeah, I was starting to get a little bit worried about McMahon as he continued to heat up.
Yeah, for sure.
He was a pending unrestricted free agent. He could have very easily continued to bet on himself and take this down the stretch drive and see what kind of payday he could earn himself in the summer.
If he goes and scores a couple of goals in the playoffs in big moments, yeah, I mean, somebody would overpay for that.
He might have cost himself a few bucks signing as early as he did, but I'm really glad that the Leafs managed to get it done. As for Benoit, you know, he was a restricted free agent at the end of the season, so the team had a little bit more control, but I think it sends a really great message to the rest of the group to get that business taken care of with a guy who has just, you know, played his damn heart out ever since he's been in a Leafs uniform and has done everything that the club has asked him to do. So really happy to have both players in the fold moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, again, tip of the cap to Tree, because I think it's been two of his best moves, and I gave him plenty of shit after the deadline, and I'm whelmed, baby. I'm finally whelmed. So one other thing that we should really hit on before, you know, we get into the stretch drive here, the goaltending situation, what a roller coaster this has been all season. Obviously, you've got Joseph Woll back in the fold now after his injury, but they've been kind of slow working him in, and they've had the luxury because, fuck, Ilya Samsonov has been real good.
Yeah, talking about Reeves earlier and someone that we thought might never play again, like, did anyone see this coming from Samsonov? You know, aside from maybe the Leafs, who I think deserve a ton of credit for how they handled the entire situation. I know that that's definitely like a hindsight take for me, because at the time it was like I couldn't understand what they were doing. But, you know, looking back, just giving him that time for a mental reset instead of, you know, forcing him into action down with the Marlies and risking things, you know, snowballing even further from there. It's obviously worked out, and Samsonov deserves a ton of credit himself for the way that he's been able to turn things around and get, like, not only his season, but his entire career back on track over the last few months. He's been really damn good for a significant stretch now. I think, as I said earlier, it's probably his job to lose at this point. We've seen a lot of things change over the course of six games in the past, but where it stands right now, I think he'd have to play himself out of starting game one.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. I mean, again, we've said the good problem to have thing already this episode, but I mean, I don't feel terribly, like, I know they've both gone through swings, you know, but what's been nice is that they haven't really been bad at the same time. And then when you, in when there was the lengthy injuries and kind of Samsonov's up and down, you had Burton Jones that stepped in. So like on the whole all year, like there's been some weird swings with the goaltending and obviously a pretty bad injury to, but like at no point did it ever, were they ever like losing a bunch of games because of their bad goaltending. So it's been a, you know, a nice kind of change to not have to, I don't know, have that worry, but he's Samsonov just, you can't say it enough, just like how crazy that story is. And I think you nailed it with the talking about the not playing any games for the Marlies, because if he does play a game for the Marlies, and look what happened to Jack Campbell, right?
I was just like, going to say Jack Campbell mode.
It was the minute he went down there and let in like seven goals or whatever the hell it was, it's over. Like,
yeah,
because they both kind of, I mean, Samsonov has a bit of, his brain can get in the way, I think, sometimes. And, you know, which we've seen with Campbell before, too. So I think that's one of the most important parts of the stories is that they didn't put him at risk for something like that.
Kind of piggybacking off of that exact point about, you know, the whole mental part of it when it comes to Samsonov and goaltending in general. I think even like if all things were equal and it was a dead heat between Samsonov and Wohl, I'd probably still lean towards starting Samsonov in game one, just because I think it's an easier pivot if things don't go well for Samsonov to turn to Wohl and throw him into the fire than it would be to kind of demoralize Samsonov by having Wohl leapfrog him for that game one start. And maybe if things don't go well for Wohl, you're turning to a Samsonov who maybe isn't as confident as he is right now. So I think that that's a good point, Keith, about, you know, the mental part of the game when it comes to Samsonov. But he looks to be in a good place right now, and he's confident and seems like the first half of the season was a million years ago.
Yeah.
My God, I want to hit fast forward on these last six games so fucking bad.
Well, like on that note, like what are things that you guys are kind of still engaged on or watching for down these last six games?
The pristine health of the entire team.
Yeah, that too.
Well, I think everyone and their dog has been having this conversation, so we might as well have it too. How do you handle the Matthews pursuit for 70 while balancing that kind of desire for just being risk averse and trying to keep everyone healthy heading into game one? Like if Matthews is sitting on 68 goals with a game left, is he in your lineup?
Cam, you can go first.
I mean, no. I want to say no.
I mean, they sat Mitch in the last game last year when he was on, what, 98 or 99 points? Yeah. For a guy who has been just kind of hovering around that century mark for a number of seasons. So I think I kind of lean the same way as you, Cam. I think they'd err on the side of caution.
I don't know, man. 100 points is not the same as 70 goals.
Yeah, like,
it's true. I don't know. It's such a hard conversation because if he did get hurt, it would retroactively be the stupidest decision ever. But man, you'd have to have him on board with it though. Like I'd almost let.
Yeah.
I know this is not the smart way to operate a hockey team, but like I'd almost want him to make the call. Like if that's it's way too historic to kind of lump in with, you know, a guy at 49 goals or 99 points or something like that. Like this is it's insane. But I mean, I don't know. I think I probably do it. I probably play him as much as that's not the smart thing.
The one thing is they've kind of been rolling back his minutes a little bit as of late.
I think that's an important way to look at it too. Like don't play him 23, 24 minutes for the last half a dozen games here.
Yeah. Maybe don't push for it like with everything you've got, but you know, still put them in a place to at least get within reach.
Load up the offensive zone starts, power play, like, but don't play him all night 5-on-5.
I think the big one for him was, you know, not only tying McDavid's 64, but I think Obies. He really wants to get past Obies 65 and, you know, at least have that record for the most goals in the salary cap era. So, you know, go pot a hat trick in the next game or two, and you know, maybe this conversation becomes moot and he's able to reach 70 before we get down to those last couple of games. But yeah, it's going to be something interesting to watch.
One point to consider is that he's going to score 80 next year. So who really cares? You know, let Sam Reinhart stay in the lineup to try to get his 60 or whatever the fuck. He ain't ever seeing this again. Matthews, you know, just take it easy.
That's a good counterpoint. He'll be back here next year.
Yeah, already ahead of Ovi in terms of 60 goal seasons. He's got two. Ovi only ever did it the one time.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. I don't, like, we've said this before on the show about like not taking it for granted or whatever, but like you almost have to just drive that point home to yourself once in a while when you're watching him, because it's become so automatic. But like, this guy is a freak and has a very real opportunity to go down as the greatest goal scorer the game has ever seen. And he plays for the Leafs.
That's right.
And should probably also be nominated for the Selke Trophy this year on top of that. So no big deal.
It's nice to have him.
Yeah, it's not bad.
All right. So a few things to get to before we wrap up here. Some tough news out of Atlantic Canada, Leafs-wise, or Leafs-related at least, as the Newfoundland Growlers are no more. Really bummed about this.
Out with a whimper.
Yeah, they were shuttered last week by the league. They were terminated by the Board of Governors after the ownership, which also owned the Laval team.
No, Trois-Rivières.
Right, Trois-Rivières team, which, because junior hockey, or minor pro hockey, I guess in this case, one owner for two teams. I guess that they managed to sort things out for Trois-Rivières and not so much for the Growlers. So that was it. They didn't even get to play out the rest of their schedule. Fans didn't get to say goodbye. That sucks, man.
Man, that's got to be tough for the fan base, which, you know, we haven't been over there to catch a game, but by all accounts, a pretty loyal, dedicated fan base.
That's been through it with, you know, pro and
Maple
junior
Leafs,
hockey.
The Fog Devils, like, that sucks, man.
But, you know, imagine even being a player on that team and, like, you don't even know any of this is going on, and you show up to the rink one day and they're saying, hey,
you're an unrestricted free agent.
Enjoy it today because this might be the end. Like, that'd be an awful shock to the system. Got a feel for the guys who are out of a job because of it. There's not enough room.
Yeah, especially the Newfoundland guys. I mean, they have plenty of local guys on the team who are, you know, probably would not have been playing
otherwise,
pro hockey at all if you know, the team weren't kind of in their backyard, right? Like Zach O'Brien, for example, is a guy who, like, could have been tearing up the Q League much earlier than he was, but he decided to stay home in Newfoundland, and, you know, he got plenty of run with the Growlers over the years, and it's like, he kind of seems like a guy who just wanted to hang around Newfoundland and happen to have a pro team to play for. So it sucks for those guys for sure.
Yeah, and it's kind of having a bit of a ripple effect on some of the Leafs prospects as well. Not that they typically have a ton of guys under NHL contract playing in the East Coast League, but they do have a lot of guys on American League deals, and there's not enough room for all of those guys to get playing time with the Marlies down the stretch here. They did have Vyacheslav Peksa, who is under contract with the Leafs, a goaltending prospect, was playing in Newfoundland all year. So now he's, you know, been forced into basically third, fourth string duty with the Marlies here for the rest of the season. So yeah, lots of people impacted by it. And you just got to feel sorry for the people in Newfoundland more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hope they figure something out for that arena, get a new, I don't know, like, if you look at getting back in the queue or something, but yeah, you got to get hockey back there.
Yeah. The future of the Mary Brown Center is very much, up in the air. So,
too good of a name to not have a full-time tenant.
Great name. One of the greatest logos for the Growlers, as far as I'm concerned.
So good. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Super bummed. Trying to find a picture of Timothy Liljegren in a Newfoundland Growlers jersey. He only played one game, so I don't know if I'll be able to dig one of those up. But it's a bummer for sure.
I mean, hey, that's where Bobby McMahon got his start in this organization, right?
That's right.
So it is, you know, maybe there's not a ton of success stories that start there, but there are a few. And
a lot more over the last number of years out of the ECHL specifically.
Well, yeah. Going back to the Kyle Dubas days, when he came in as general manager, he talked about starting to expand to more of like a three-tiered development system, something more similar to what professional baseball teams do with their AAA, AA, single A affiliates. And, you know, I think that they definitely started to use the growlers more in that time, at least with having AHL contracted players there, mm-hmm. kind of on the bubble to get some American League time. And yeah, again, we've seen a handful of guys earn NHL deals down the road after starting in the East Coast League. So it's always sad when there's one less spot for guys to be able to ply their trade and push towards their ultimate goal of having an NHL career.
Got one of them playing for the Bruins right now.
Yeah, Justin Brazeau, the one that got away.
Yeah.
Tough news. I mean, that could be it for pro hockey in Atlantic Canada, period. I mean, I know that the ever popular, you know, NHL to Halifax topic comes up every once in a while. I just don't see it happening. And so it's tough to see the growlers go, because you never know when or if there'll be another team to check out. Em and I just booked a trip to Newfoundland. We're going in the summer. I haven't been since I was two.
Nice.
So I am fired.
Tartry Festival?
No. We're avoiding all the crazy shit, all the Shania Twain. Just let us experience, you know. I need to ease in. I can't go full George Street Festival first time.
I'd be nervous about my well-being if I did that.
And I can't imagine there's been too many episodes where we have not one but two East Coast related pieces of Leafs news to discuss, but the Maple Leafs have signed out of Quinnipiac University Jacob Quillen from Dartmouth, which is where I'm recording this right now. And
the dark side.
A couple of games already under his belt with the Marlies. Obviously, he scored the national championship winning goal last year against Matthew Knies in Minnesota. And I mean, I think that this is, again, just a depth piece, a guy that you hope will kind of develop into something that maybe can contribute. But I certainly was intrigued by some of the stuff I was reading about him in the last week, Nick. I don't know if you got to check him out at all with the Marlies, but what was your impression of this one?
I saw him a bit in college. You know, he definitely wasn't a player that I was exactly dialed in on, but got to see him play a little bit.
He's a pretty smart player, right? He's got hockey sense, kind of a good defensive type of guy.
Everything you read on him, it's the kind of 200-foot game work ethic thing is the leading kind of trait that gets talked about.
A bit on the younger side for an NCAA free agent, so I think that's a part of the equation that's really encouraging, gives him a little bit more runway to continue to develop. But he's got a lot of those traits that are just kind of projectable to the pro game, as you guys are talking about there. Just a reliable defensive player, solid on faceoffs, skates well, is willing to get in on the forecheck and just kind of use his body in that way to create pressure. Just a bit of a lottery ticket, right? But, you know, anytime you sign an undrafted player out of college, that's basically what it amounts to. We've seen a few hit in the past, and I think Quillen, a guy who grew up cheering for the Leafs, which is another plus in terms of this signing, he's definitely got a shot to at least grow into a viable fourth line option who can play either on the wing or down the middle. He played on the wing with the Marlies in his first game on Saturday. Didn't see a whole lot of run in that one, but he lined up at center on the third line in Sunday's game. After I didn't even really expect him to get into both games in his first weekend with the team, to be honest. But it seems like they're going to give him a shot to lock down a spot as they head into their own playoff run here. And we'll be able to get a look at him in camp next year and just see how far along he is.
And on the Marlies / prospects front, Noah Chadwick also going to be joining the Marlies after his junior season wrapped up here. So
breakout season for him, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do against pros. You know, big guy. A lot of intrigue on this guy.
He's super smart, man. Like, I think he kind of flew under the radar last year in his draft year because he didn't have like the gaudy point totals from the back end. But Lethbridge wasn't a particularly strong team. He wasn't in a prominent role. This year, he got elevated into a larger role on the back end and that really allowed his instincts, especially offensively, to shine through. And he took full advantage of the opportunity, had a breakout year. I think it says a lot anytime a sixth round pick gets signed to an entry level deal just a few months after he was chosen in the sixth round. And that's what happened with Chadwick. So the organization is obviously very high on the player and what he was able to do this season in the WHL. I don't know exactly how much run he's going to get. Like I said, the fact that the growlers have been dissolved and it forced a lot more of those AHL contracted players up to the Marlies, it creates an even bigger logjam for a guy coming out of junior to try and carve his way into the lineup heading into the postseason. So I'm not sure how much run he's going to get. I expect him to get a couple games here. I think the Marlies have six or seven remaining on their regular season schedule after today. So yeah, either way, encouraging development from Chadwick thus far, and looks like a potential late round gem for the Leafs.
You guys want to remember a Leaf?
I almost forgot about remembering a Leaf.
Can't forget. I already know you guys remember this Leaf. We've talked about him before, but we haven't officially remembered him. You guys remember Clark Wilm?
Oh yeah, St. John Flame legend, man. He was.
That's right.
Yeah, no, he played a couple of years here, and then I believe he was bad. He played in Newfoundland too, I think. But yeah, no, he was a fan favorite in St. John. He was kind of just a gritty kind of power forward guy for the St. John Flames, little smaller, but like just people loved him here when he was here.
Yeah, I didn't even consider the East Coast connections here, yeah, considering what we've just been discussing over the last few minutes. But yeah, both the Flames and the St. John's Maple Leafs when he was in the Leaf system. So yeah.
One of my best friends in my teenage years, like one of the guys that I used to, you know, get together with to watch Leafs games and talk about the Leafs all day with before we had this. Actually, the guy I had my first apartment with after high school, the biggest Clark Wilm fan.
How does that happen?
I don't know, man. Just one of the. Well, we're talking about Simone Benoit and things like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was just one of those guys who came in and, you know, obviously made an impression with the way that he played the game. And yeah, my buddy Liam just absolutely loved Clark Wilm.
And just to properly put into context how small Cape Breton is, Liam lived just down the street from me.
You could have hit his house with a rock.
Yeah. You two were a defense pair on a couple of my hockey teams. You were both my captains at different points.
You are not dispelling any stereotypes here.
And I lived in the basement of the building that you guys lived together in the darkness.
Yeah, that's actually hilarious. Oh, God. You just reminded me of the time that I think Liam and I were forced into playing an entire period defense one time down in like Sherbrooke or something.
I remember when the two of you were sick in, I think it was Stellarton, and we had a tournament and everyone was sick and we had 3D and two of them were forwards put back on D, including myself. And I just hardly left the ice. And I still remember the shower I took when I got home from that tournament. I just stood there for at least 40 minutes, hardly
moving. Couldn't piss a drop. Oh, God. Those are the days.
Yeah. All right. Six games left.
Cheers, boys. Go Leafs.
Go Leafs. Go.